This is a first for our Those Were the Days program, a real authentic band remote, or a reasonable facsimile of a band remote today. We've switched to the beautiful Willowbrook Ballroom and Restaurant in suburban Willow Springs, where between sets we have a chance to say hello to one of the most respected, most popular band leaders of all time, Freddie Martin. Hello, Freddie Martin.
Hi, Chuck. How are you?
Just fine. Glad to have you, glad to be out here today and have a chance to chat with you on our Those Were the Days program. How many band remote broadcasts do you guess you've done over the years?
I couldn't begin to guess. It's a good question. Someday I'll think about it and figure it out. Because we used to broadcast. When I had my first band in Brooklyn, New York, at the Bossert Hotel, we broadcast over CBS Network three times a week. And from then on, for the next 30 years, it was broadcasting.
Radio was a pretty important factor in getting the Freddie Martin Band into the big time then, wasn't it?
It certainly was. It was the factor, along with records, of course.
Mm-hmm. You had actually remote broadcasts from everywhere, right?
From coast to coast,
yes. All across the country.
Yeah.
In 1935, I understand, you were on both the Red Network and the Blue Network of NBC.
Yes, I guess I was. WJZ was the blue,
mm-hmm.
And WEAF, I think, was that?
EAF was New York, right?
Right.
Yeah,
New York City.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you, in the mid-30s, you did a program called the Open House. It was a kind of a talent-type program.
Yes, it was probably before Major Bowes, I think. Vic's Open House, yes.
And you had, what was it, a half an hour type thing?
Half hour radio show.
What did you do before that, before the open house? Before we were talking, you said something about the
Of course, we were doing remotes out of New York City, mm-hmm. from the Waldorf and from the Bossert in Brooklyn and the St. Regis. And then I got my first commercial radio show with the Marx Brothers, which we did at NBC in the studio. And the Marx Brothers are pretty funny guys to listen to, but they're funnier to watch. And after two or three programs, they decided to have a studio audience, which was unheard of, mm-hmm. before. And so they were the first to bring a studio audience into the studio, maybe 50 or 60 people. And they got their laughs for real.
They relied on the reaction from the audience, mm-hmm. right? Gee, that's a... I've heard that Ed Wynn relied upon a studio audience, too, but I've never heard of the Marx Brothers, and I'm really surprised to even learn that the Marx Brothers ever attempted radio.
That's right, because they're such a visual act.
Yeah.
And all four of them were on it. Of course, one of them didn't speak at all, you know, the...
Harpo,
right.
Yes. Did you ever, do you recall doing, I know you did this, I want to find out if I can test your memory now. Do you recall doing a program for a product called Eden's Liquid Dry Shampoo?
I sure do. And they still owe me money.
That was a going places party, they called it. As a matter of fact, I have a copy of one of those shows from the, I guess it was the middle or late 30s, wasn't it?
It was about the middle 30s. As a matter of fact, this was the first commercial I ever had. And the fellow who hired me for it later became the manager of my band. The company went bankrupt or something, and I never did get paid for some of the broadcasts.
You know, a product called liquid dry shampoo.
Yeah.
Already it's a loser to start to start with a liquid dry shampoo. It was an interesting concept, though. They had they would take you to a simulated event, a sorority party or something like that, or something at a hotel or something.
I recall that. Then I later did. That was the first cosmetic show that I did. Mm-hmm. I did a year for Elizabeth Arden. And it was quite an experience. She was quite a sophisticated woman, and she wanted just the real society tunes. And mm-hmm. I had programmed mm-hmm. a song called Stardust one day. She said, I never heard of it. I said, well, it's a very big hit, Miss Arden. But she said, take it off. And I remember the song we replaced it with. It was Parley Moi d'Amour. She wanted a French song in there. And we had Charlie Knickerbocker as the commentator. And it was a very highbrow type of show. And then we did Lady Esther Serenade after Wayne King for a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, you did also. You were really in cosmetics a lot. You did the Fitch bandwagon, didn't you?
Yes. They had done it once a week with a different band. Then for one summer, I did the whole summer myself.
You were the first of the big name bands to be on it for an extended run.
That's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a breakthrough.
Well, a lot of memories in radio. I remember in the early 40s when Coca-Cola spotlight bands during the beginning of the war, they had a 15-minute broadcast originating from army camps throughout the United States. And the band would travel to the camp and do the 15-minute show before the GIs. But on Saturday night, they had a contest going in which the band leader who sold the most records that week would get the Saturday night spot, which was a full half hour and paid twice the money. And I was the first one to win it with my Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto theme. And I held it for 10 weeks, 10 straight weeks, and then I was knocked off by Harry James with You Made Me Love You.
Well, 10 weeks isn't chopped liver either.
No, it wasn't. It was probably one of my biggest thrills.
Oh, that's great. You were the resident band leader, I think, for a number of radio programs, including the Jack Carson program. Is that
Jack Carson show ran about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, all the, like, Edgar Bergen had Ray Noble, and Bob Hope had Skinny Ennis, and Jack Carter had me, and Burns and Allen with Guy Lombardo, and it was always a name band with the radio shows. Those were great days.
Yeah. Radio was important in your life, in your personal life, too, wasn't it? Didn't you propose to your wife over the radio?
No, I didn't.
I knew I was going to get into trouble on that.
No?
Now, I have a copy of a Radio Mirror magazine here that says, from 1935, we were looking at it a moment ago.
Oh, it wasn't my band. What does it say?
Well, it said that you were doing a broadcast remote, and it said that you sent your girlfriend then, Lillian, at the time, a telegram saying, listen to the second and third number on the broadcast tonight and let me know what you think. And the second number was I Love You, and the third number was Will You Be Mine. Now, was that a press agent story?
No, it's true. Now, I remember it now. How could I forget something like that? I wasn't thinking of the
saved!
When I worked, I was a saxophone player for a fellow named Jack Albin, and we were playing in New York, we were broadcasting, and I used to make out the programs. He didn't know. Mm-hmm. He didn't know that there was a little trick in this program, so that's the way it went through. I do recall it now.
I see. That was 39 years ago, wasn't it?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And you and Lillian are traveling together. She's in Chicago right now, isn't she?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's a nice story, and I'm glad it came true because it was such a great story.
I had forgotten that.
We won't tell her that you
forgot it. Oh.
You weren't programming music during the war, you know, sending Nazi messages out or anything. they were worried about that, you
of
know, during the
were.
War, all of the codes and things like that. Well, a quick half a minute on the legend of Freddie Martin. You were an orphan at four, raised by an aunt in Cleveland, and began your musical career by selling saxophones
I was orphaned at four, but I was raised in an orphanage in Springfield, Ohio, until my aunt married and took me out to live with her in Cleveland, Ohio.
In Cleveland.
Yeah.
Well, your first break came when you filled in for Guy Lombardo, correct?
Yes, it was his first engagement out of Canada in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was working after school hours and during the summer for a band instrument company, and I just found that a good excuse to go up and see the Lombardos every night because I had my own little high school band, and they never bought an instrument off of me, you know, in the year that I used to go up there two or three nights a week. And they knew I had a little band in high school, and they hired me to substitute for them when they went out on a three-day junket someplace around Cleveland. It was the University of Michigan, I remember now. And so that was the first paying job I ever had, and he gave it to me.
Well, that's great. You still have that dollar if you have it framed?
No, I don't. I needed every dollar.
Well, we must get around to the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto, Tonight We Love. when it was recorded, is it a fact that the second side of the disc was what they say the musical question?
Yes, why don't we do this more often?
Why don't we do this more often? That same magazine that I had before suggested that the composers of the song Why Don't We Do This More Often were a little apprehensive about being paired on a recording with an adaptation of one of the classics.
They were very upset about it. They didn't want it at all. And theirs was the A side, and the Czech concerto was the B side. Mm-hmm. And of course, it turned out that the concerto was the one that was the hit. And they were very happy about it because they had a million-selling record, which I doubt the other one would have been.
Well, so within 7 days after it was released,
right,
the concerto was number one on the bestseller list. Well, they're both still big sellers today, and I'm sure that you're playing both of those songs every night out here at the Willow.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
What is the how many records have you sold of the concerto by this time? Have you any idea?
No, I haven't, because I re-recorded it when I changed labels I was with RCA for almost 20 years, and then I went with Capitol. I re-recorded it for them, and then 5 years later, I re-recorded it again for Decca in a Freddie Martin's Greatest Hits type of album. Mm-hmm. So I really couldn't say. I would estimate that it's probably close to 5 or 6 million records.
That's quite a record.
I'd sure like to get another one.
That wasn't your original theme, was it?
No, my original theme, when I first started in Brooklyn, we were playing on the roof of a hotel there, the Bossert roof, and it was dancing on the ceiling. And then my second theme, I had a piano player in those days who was a singer named Terry Shand, and he talked me into using a song that he wrote called Bilo Bye Lullaby. So I used that for a couple of years until the concerto became so big, and it was Johnny Green in Hollywood one day and says, "Oh, you should use that as your theme song, because this is the song that really puts you over the top." And so then I think you're right, and I switched to that. Been using it ever since.
But here in
Chicago, I get so many requests for Bilo Bye Lullaby, because in my 4 years that I played the Aragon Ballroom, that was my theme then.
At the Aragon?
Bilo Bye. Mm-hmm.
You also played, the now defunct Edgewater Beach Hotel.
Yes, I was there the last 3 years of the Beach Walk's existence, and I was rather sad when I heard back in California that they were going to tear the Edgewater down.
You put in a few years at the Coconut Grove, didn't you?
From 1940 to April of 60 of this year of 1970.
30 years at the Coconut Grove in Los Angeles. That's quite a record, too.
It sure is. It's the all-time record for any hotel in the United States.
What's next on the agenda for Freddie Martin?
Well, next on the agenda, I am going to be here for this week. I have a week of one-nighters around the Chicago area. Then we fly back to Los Angeles, where for the rest of the year we're doing parties, November and December, just a series of private parties in San Diego, San Francisco, Phoenix, Los Angeles, on the West Coast. After the first year, we haven't completed our plans, but we're thinking about very seriously about a tour of the Orient, Japan, Hong Kong. And
you'll be back this neck of the woods pretty soon, too?
I hope to get back next spring.
We hope so, because Freddie Martin's band and a fellow who likes to dance and a gal who likes to dance would make a great party.
It sure is. It's a lovely spot here. It really is. They have a good restaurant, fine food, and the atmosphere in the ballroom. It's not so big that you feel lost in it. It has an intimacy that very few ballrooms have, I think.
It's a wonderful spot, and we're glad to be here this evening chatting with you, Freddie Martin, on Our Those Were the Days broadcast. Thanks very much for
It's my pleasure
being
to be here,
us.
Chuck. Thanks, and thanks for recalling all those wonderful memories.
We'll tune in again someday to Freddie Martin.
Love to.
Thank you.